Well, peace, friends. My name's Tom. I'm the pastor here at Sycamore Creek, and I know what you're thinking. You're like, Pastor Tom looks kind of weird this morning. Yes, I cut my hair. I was sick of long hair. But then my glasses are, you know, you're like, are you wearing contacts? No, I'm not. I have lost my glasses somewhere in this building. So if you find them, please don't step on them. Bring them to me. I also brought some other things that make me weird this morning. I collect Barbie dolls, sort of. I have Ken and Barbie, X-Files Barbie dolls. I brought them. I know it's weird, Jeremy. They're gonna watch you right here. Okay, make sure you stay in line. But speaking of weird, Jeremy's kind of weird too. If you ever hang out with Jeremy for very long, he likes to do this "Would you rather" thing. Have you ever done this with him or with somebody? He comes up with one really awkward and embarrassing situation or experience, and then he comes up with a second one, and he says, "Would you rather do the first one or the second one?" And you don't really want to do either of them, but because Jeremy's weird, you go along with it. So I was in the bookstore one time, and I came across this thing that was called Hypertheticals, 50 Questions for Insane Conversations. And I was looking at it, and I was like, this is perfect for Jeremy, which is really weird that I thought of that, because I'm not really a gift giver, as you're going to hear in a little bit. But so I brought it to our next meeting. We meet every week to work on worship, and I gave it to him as a gift. And he pulled out the first one, and this was the first one. It's called The Cannibal's Quandary. The Cannibal's Quandary, all right? Are you ready for this? It's going to get really weird here in just a minute. Roll your sleeves up. You are in a plane crash in the Andes, not unlike those people from the movie Alive. How many of you have seen the movie Alive? Not many. A couple. You know where this is going now, right? Or I suppose like the 1972 Uruguayan rugby team who experienced this situation in reality. As such, you will be forced to consume the human flesh of the people who died on impact. This is getting weird. Yes, this is what you pay Jeremy and me to do each week. This will be a terrible experience. That's an understatement. But it is the only way for you to survive. Fortunately, you did not know any of the victims personally. Small consolation prize there, okay? Would you rather eat a dead baby, or would you rather eat a dead elderly person? What is this? So Jeremy and I, we spend probably 10 minutes sort of dissecting, no pun intended, the finer points of eating an elderly person or a baby. Do you remember? I think you went with a baby, I think. I think you did. And I went with the elderly person because I figured that was a little less like social stigma if I got home and alive. And I think we literally spent like 5 or 10 minutes trying to think through this. I looked up and I had forgotten that we were meeting in Bigby. And all of these people around us, their eyes are huge. They're like, we're like, okay, let's plan worship now. Oh, it's just those church people. They're weird. So that was so embarrassing. That gets to the problem I want to wrestle with today, and that is that we don't like to be weird. We don't like to be weird, and we especially don't like to be weird Christians. I went to a seminary down in Durham, North Carolina, and one of the professors there, his name was Bill Quick. He was a pastor here in Michigan as well, and he liked to take out the people who the students who were from Michigan. He'd take them out to eat once or a semester or once a year. So he took us out to this barbecue place. It's kind of like being like in Finley's or something like that, but in Durham, North Carolina. And once the food is all delivered, ordered and delivered, he looks at us and he says, "All right, let's shock them all. Let's sing the doxology." Now, I'm not somebody who, like, usually, I'm not ashamed of my faith. I mean, I stand up and talk about it regularly. You ask me, and I'm trying to intentionally share that faith, that Jesus, with anybody I come across with. But I'm not somebody who's, like, wants to be weird and sing in the middle of a restaurant with a bunch of other pastors the doxology. You know the doxology? Praise God from whom all blessings flow. Praise God. Okay, so. Okay. All right. So I just tapped into like some latent traditionalism in our church there. So I just, you know, you're shrinking. Like, I don't want to be weird, first of all. And secondly, I definitely don't want to be a weird Christian. And yet, there is something undeniably unusual, weird, peculiar about being a follower of Jesus. I don't usually quote from the King James Version here at Sycamore Creek, but it feels appropriate today to do so. Peter, one of Jesus' closest friends, said, "But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a what? Peculiar people." You're kind of peculiar. You're sort of peculiar there, Bob. You're really peculiar. We are peculiar. We're weird. When you think about the three words that we use to talk about who we are as a church and who we want to be, we use three words that are out on our sign: curious, creative, and compassionate. But when we were trying to figure out what those words would be, there was actually a fourth one that was on the drawing board, and that fourth one was countercultural. Or you could have said weird, but then it was the three C's and a W. And we decided to drop that fourth one, not because we didn't want to be countercultural, but because three is always like classic rhetoric. Three is always better than four. But we also realized that in the word curious was something curious. You see, the word curious has two meanings. It's like, oh, I'm curious about that. But also, that's curious. Tom, you're kind of curious. You're sort of peculiar, kind of weird. You see, curious also means weird, peculiar. So I would hope that people would look at us at Sycamore Creek and say, they're a kind of peculiar, curious crowd. I'm curious about going and seeing what, you know, makes them tick, scratching underneath the surface, below what is just that on the surface weird. And so if the problem was that we don't want to be weird, then I want to suggest that the solution today is to find the wonderful weird, or find the weird that is wonderful. Find the wonderful in the weird. Get comfortable with our weirdness. You see, most of us, we've got this comfort zone, and if this is the center of the comfort zone and somewhere out there is the edge of the comfort zone, we want to be right here in the middle. But the problem is that God is always calling us, like pulling us to the edges of that comfort zone into things that feel weird to us. You know, it feels kind of weird to stand in the middle of you here and talk, but that's what God is pulling us into that weird space, to do something unusual, peculiar, curious, to hang out with that person that is kind of weird, strange. God inhabits the wildness of the periphery of our comfort zone. And so if we are going to follow Jesus, we're going to get out of the middle of this where it's normal and usual, and we're going to get into the weird on the edges. And we're going to have to learn to find the wonderful in the weird. The wonderful in the weird. Now, there are two things I think that are distinctive or weird about make sort of curious about Christians. There are two things that we avoid as Christians. The first is idolatry, and the second is injustice. We want to make sure we're worshiping the one true God, not other gods. And in our day and age, when you talk about other gods, it's not always like supernatural. I'm not talking about like worshiping Thor or Wonder Woman or, you know, Odin or something like that, you know, some Greek or Norse god, supernatural deity. The gods in our culture are more like money and fame and comfort and security and power and popularity. Like those are the things that tend to be idols for us. And Christians avoid idolatry, but we also avoid injustice. This past weekend, I'm going to share a little more with you later. There were five of us from our church that went to an anti-racism training to learn about the subtle ways that we tend to value one group of people over another. And we did that not because we're Americans. We did it because we're Christians. We did it because Christians avoid injustice. Now, that's putting it in the negative. We could flip it and say that Christians don't just avoid things. There's things that Christians love. So if you put that in the positive, you say, well, Christians love God, the one true God, not funny money, not fame, not power, but God, Yahweh, the God of Jesus Christ, the God and Father of our Lord Jesus. That's the one true God that we love. And the second thing that we love is we love our neighbor. That's what makes us distinctive. So usually when you think about, like people think about Christians and going to church, they start to think about a bunch of rules. Like, I don't do this and don't do that. What is it? I don't drink or cuss or chew or go with girls who do. Is that how, like the old saying was? So now you all are going to like be looking and seeing, does Sarah cuss and drink? And well, I'll let you talk to her about those things. Christianity isn't about rules. Like if you scratch the surface, if you get a little deeper on any one of those rules, underneath the rule is really love. So let's think about this for a second. You know that really weird exit on Cedar onto 96? Like, it's like, how do you get on that thing down there? You got to, like, to go left, you have to turn right and then swing back around, and then you get on the highway up on. Do you remember, like, back this summer, there was a billboard at that ramp onto 96, and it said, "Lust sends you to hell." Do you remember that billboard? I wonder how many people drove by that billboard and said, "I've seen the light. I'm not going to lust anymore." I always think that billboards like that are a little obnoxious, but that is, so Christians, we don't lust, or we try not to lust, or we confess when we do lust, and it's not just because it's a rule of something we don't do, it's because if you go deeper underneath there, what you see is that God is calling us, those of us who follow Jesus, to love not just the body of somebody, not just how they look on the outside, but to love the whole person, the image of God in them, their spirit, their soul. Who are they as a whole person, not just what they look like? So you see, like, underneath the don't do this is love. Or we think about, in the same sort of vein of things, Christians save sex for marriage, for a lifelong commitment. And why is that? It's not just to be a killjoy. It's because it gives you a love and a deep intimacy with one person. It's underneath the surface. It's not about being a killjoy. It's about love. Or you think about Christians give money away, and it's not just so you don't have more money to spend on yourself. It's because when we give money away, we love other people. We help meet other people's needs. Or in the case of the church, we create spaces for community to thrive. You see, underneath each one of those "don't do this" is love. That's what makes us peculiar, unusual, weird. Or as Jesus said it, "I'm going to give you a new commandment, to love each other." Now, we've heard that so many times that it doesn't seem new to us. But for Jesus, it obviously was something new. He's saying, hey, listen, in the world, it's a dog-eat-dog world. But here, if you're going to follow me, then you're going to be known by my love, by your love for each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples. That's what's going to make us peculiar and weird. Or as Mike Foster, this whole series is built on a book called People of the Second Chance by Mike Foster. And if you're a guest here today, on the back door on the way out to the parking lot, there's a big stack of those books, and you can take one for free. All of our small groups are reading through that book. If you haven't been in a small group, we kind of closed out the registration last week, but my small group still meets tonight, and it's not too late to join in. We really didn't do much last week except introductions. So Mike Foster, the author of the book, says that the spiritual life revolves around this central question. You want to have some fun. And what does that fun entail? Well, it's not about saying, or it's about saying yes to God's wildness. See, you see, remember, God inhabits the fringes of our comfort zone out here. So if you're going to have some fun, it's because you're going to get weird and be on the edge of God's wildness. Or you can say yes to your control, which that puts you back at the center of your comfort zone. I'm in control. Or do I want to have some fun on the edge, where I start to find that the weird is wonderful. So what I want to talk about with the rest of our time today is how are we distinctive in the ways, or some ways we can be distinctive or weird in the ways that we love. I want to suggest to you three ways to love this morning. The first is to warm up with words. Words are like matches. They're cheap, and they can start fires, and that fire can either be a campfire that everybody gathers around and builds community and warmth, or it can be start a fire that's an act of spiritual arson where you tear somebody's soul down. We did this series back in August called The Power of Words, and I thought it was going to be a good series. I was very excited about when we started it, but man, did you guys respond to that? We got so much feedback about how important that was, because words really build up, or they can really tear down. The theme verse for that, which we encouraged you to memorize, was Ephesians 4:29. Let no evil talk come out of your mouths, but only what is useful for building up as there is need. Another translation that we often use around here is the NLT, and it says, don't use foul or abusive language. And why is that? Is it just because we as Christians say, you know, you're not supposed to do this stuff? No, it's because, as Paul goes on, he says, let everything you say be good and helpful so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. Sarah and I had an experience of this about 7 years ago. We were pregnant with our first son, Micah, and we had waited for 13 years before we had our first child. And when you wait that long, guess what you get in? You get in ruts, right? We had this wonderful monastic quiet lifestyle in our house. I mean, and everything was in its place. There was never, you know, I could sit down and I could read a book, and I didn't go to bed exhausted at the end of the day. Like, I mean, it was wonderful. And what are you saying? Are you doing a sad song for me? Yeah. So, but we knew that when Micah was on his way, we didn't know it was going to be Mike yet, because we waited to find out whether it was a boy or girl when he got born, when he was born. So, I can't remember. I think it was going to be Lucy Marie. He's either going to be Micah or Lucy Marie, one of the two, Micah John or Lucy Marie. But it ended up being Micah. And when Micah, right before Micah came, you know, we were going to the birthing classes. And I'd go home after working here, and I'd pick Sarah up, and we'd go out to grab a bite to eat on the way over to Okemos for these birthing classes. And we stopped one night at Pancheros at Jolly and Okemos, and it's a Mexican restaurant. And we sat down for our meal. We ordered and we sat down at the table. And again, I'm not like, we're not, we don't sing the doxology in Pancheros. We're not that weird, but we do pray together before we eat. But as if you've been around here for very long, you know that I don't usually pray with my eyes closed. I like to look at y'all while I'm praying, and you can look at me. But if that's too weird, you can close your eyes. That's fine too. So I reach my hand across the table and I hold Sarah's hand. And one of us prays, and we've got our eyes open. So you don't even necessarily know that we're praying. It's not the eyes closed and heads bowed. But after we had done that, we kind of kept eating. This woman came up to our table, and she said to us, are you two Christians? Now, in our culture, we respect or value privacy, right? Like, you don't go up to somebody at their table at dinner and ask, like, are you two Christians? That's just not something that you do. And we said, well, yeah, we are. And she said, well, I saw you two praying, and I just want you to know I'm a Christian as well, and it really encourages me to see other young couples praying. And I just want God to bless you and your marriage, and you know, Sarah's showing quite a bit to bless this baby that's on the way. And Sarah and I held it together long enough for her to walk away, but we looked at each other in that moment, and we just burst into tears. It was like that word of blessing shot through the defenses that we had up. It found the little kink in our armor of the mask we were wearing. Like, we're fine, we're doing good, and that blessing was like, it was like ointment to our soul in that moment. Now, I'm not suggesting that y'all go out to lunch this afternoon and look for the people who are praying and go tell them that, you know, bless them after that. Although that may be, but the point is. encourage somebody with your words. This be a little risky with that. I mean, that was kind of risky for her to come up and do that, wasn't it? It was a little weird. You don't do that. Many of you know that my family situation going on right now. My dad was diagnosed with Lewy body dementia several years ago, and he's kind of gotten worse and worse and more confused over the last year especially. And then in the last year, my stepmom has been diagnosed with stage 4 ovarian cancer, and she's expected to live for a year, year and a half or so. So she was his primary caregiver, so we've had to work to kind of figure out living arrangements for them, and she's moved into with her sister at this point, and my dad has moved into a memory care unit. And so everything's pretty stable right now. But I was back at their house a couple weeks ago, and I was sorting through some of my dad's stuff, and he's got a bedside table right beside his bed. You know, it's like got a lamp on it and Kleenex, and then there's a little drawer that's got stuff in it, and I open the drawer up, and in there's, you know, the kind of normal stuff you'd expect to be on a bedside table. But as I'm kind of digging through it, underneath it on the bottom of that shelf or in that that drawer, I see an envelope with my handwriting on it. And I'm oh, that's kind of curious. So I pull it out, and it's a letter that's addressed to my dad. I was like, oh, I don't remember writing this. So I open it up, and it turns out that it's a letter that I wrote to my dad when I was probably about 15 years old. And I had been at youth group that night, and apparently the youth pastor told us, I want you to write a letter to your parents and tell them what you appreciate about them. And so the letter was about 2 pages front and back, just 1 page front and back, 2 pages, of my sort of free association of the things I appreciated about my dad. And the last line said, please don't bring up this letter to me. It will be embarrassing. I don't even remember writing that letter. But, you know, my dad does. Because he's kept it. I mean, this is 25 years ago I wrote this letter. For 25 years, he's had that in his bedside table, and I didn't even know it. Now, what he doesn't know is that in my bedside table is a letter that he wrote me about the same time that I've hung on to for 25 years. Be a little extravagant with your words this week. Write somebody that 2-page note. Tell somebody how much what they mean to you. Be a little bit weird. So that's your next step here. The next step is to write or say a word of encouragement to somebody this week. You can flip over on the back of your connection card and say, I'm going to do that. Here's the second way that you can love this week is to give gifts. Give gifts. Do you know how to tell if other people are gift givers, if they like experience love through giving and receiving gifts? You know, they give you gifts. They give you gifts. Now, Tabitha, I probably should have asked your permission before I tell this story, but Tabitha lives with us, and it is really clear to Sarah and I that Tabitha's love language is giving and receiving gifts, and it's because you are always going to garage sales and picking up this 25-cent thing that and coming back and giving it to us and saying, this made me think of you guys. And I mean, this is just a regular occurrence for you to say, I was at this garage sale and I saw this and I thought you guys would like it. The funny thing, the unfortunate thing for you, Tabitha, is that my love language for giving and receiving gifts is a big fat zero. So I'm like the worst person to give a gift to. I'm sorry. I probably disappoint you every single time when it comes to the way I receive the gift. Sarah's much better. She responds really positively and very exuberantly. But who are the people in your life who would communicate, love would be communicated to them by giving them a gift? And that doesn't have to be a big extravagant gift. Like I said, I mean, Tabitha picks these things up, 25, 50 cents or whatever. I mean, occasionally you really hit the jackpot, like that little sailboat that our kids love, that real sailboat that we take out to Lake Lansing, and it's a little model sailboat, you know. And it doesn't have to be big and extravagant. It doesn't even have to be, like, chefs are some of the best gift givers. I give you some food, or the gift of time. Give somebody a gift this week. I was thinking, this message is a bit autobiographical, and it has a lot to do with my dad, because that's what I'm going through right now. But I was thinking, my dad's kind of like Tabitha. His love language is giving and receiving gifts. And he, growing up, I remember, I always wanted my dad to, like, do something to tell me he loved me. And then when I became adult, I realized that he was doing it all the time. And one of the ways he did it was he'd send greeting cards. And, you know, he'd, like, go to Hallmark. Hallmark makes these holidays just to sell greeting cards, you know. And my dad was, like, you know, hook, line, and sinker on every single Hallmark holiday. And he would send me cards. And he wouldn't just buy the card. He'd, like, cross out a letter or a word, and he'd write in his own words, and he'd circle words like two times and underline things, and then he'd write a little note in it, and he'd like include cash in it, and I would like toss the greeting card and just put the cash in my pocket, you know, and go. And so lately I've been asking the question, how do I express my love for my dad as he's in this memory care unit? And the thing that struck me was, I need to go get some greeting cards. Now, I don't ever buy greeting cards, all right? Like, you're never going to get a greeting card for me. Just don't, if you're waiting, like, you might get, like, a Sycamore Creek note card from me with, like, a handwritten thank you note, but I'm not going to go to Meijer and buy you greeting cards. And usually when people give me greeting cards, like, I always feel like, how long do I have to wait for it socially acceptable to put in the recycling bin, you know? So don't buy me greeting cards, okay? But, although many of you have written me like really wonderful notes in those kind of greeting cards, and that's really what the meaning is there. So I decided, yeah, I'm going to go to Meijer, and I probably spent an hour in the greeting. I've never done this before. I spent an hour. I read way too many greeting cards, you know. And I picked out probably like five of them, and then I went to pay for them, and I like just about fell over. Like, oh my gosh, these things are expensive. Well, my dad spent a lot of money on greeting cards over the year. And I've decided I'm going to send my dad a greeting card every month. I don't know for how long, but, you know, at least for the five or six that I've bought here recently. And I was there a couple weeks ago, and sitting on the shelf was that first greeting card I'd sent him. Buy somebody a greeting card this week, not because it's their birthday, not because it's some Hallmark, holiday, but just because. Somebody came up, I preached this last week at Potterville, and somebody came up and said, go to the dollar store, they're only a dollar there, all right? Go to the dollar store. I was like, okay, I have the learning curve here for me. I asked my friends on Facebook, when was a gift that really meant something to them? When did they receive it? And my friend Michael said, we were given a van one day before we were planning on purchasing one, and 3 weeks before Maggie had our third child. After being carless for 3 months, it couldn't have been a more right time. Who gives somebody a van? All right? That's weird. Okay? Somebody needs to go give a car away this week. All right? Karen, my friend Karen, who's a pastor out at Nashville and Vermontville, said, when I was a single mom for a time, I had no money for propane to be delivered and was past due on paying the balance. Not knowing what else to do, I prayed. And the next bill that came had a credit on it. That's like a nice answer to prayer, right? But she said, I called to help them find the heir. What integrity, right? Like, to do that. That's why she's a pastor now. They said a payment was completed and too much, so I had a balance. I was never able to find out who paid the bill. Somebody needs to pay somebody's electric bill this week. Not your own. Like, you need to pay your own and somebody else's, okay? A friend of mine, Emily, sometimes these are not big things, okay? A friend of mine, Emily, said, the morning my son was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, the car ahead of me paid for my order as we grabbed breakfast on our way to the Children's Hospital in Indianapolis. I wish he or she could know what kind of devastating news we were just receiving and the difference that little bit of kindness made. You pay the bill for somebody in the back, you know, behind you in the drive-through, and they're on their way to the children's hospital. You need to be a little extravagant with your gift giving this week. So that's the next step. Give somebody a gift this week. All right, so we've talked about two ways to love. Let's talk about one more, third. Love with abandon. Love with abandon. One of the early church leaders was named Tertullian, and he was reflecting on how Christians behaved and how those who weren't Christians saw the Christians. And he said, but it is mainly the deeds of a love so noble that lead many to put a brand upon us. You know what a brand is? It's like when you hear the word Walmart, you have certain feelings about it. And when you hear the word Kmart, you have certain feelings. And when you hear the word Target, you have certain feelings about it. Like that's, what are the feelings? What's the brand of Christians is what he's talking about. And he says, see, they say, how they love one another, for they themselves are animated by mutual hatred. This is that dog-eat-dog world, right? Like, if you're, those who aren't Christians are eating each other, not literally, but are, you know, are trying to get a one-up on each other to survive, but the Christians are banding together to love each other. And he goes on, he says, see, they say about us, how they are ready even to die for one another, for they themselves would sooner kill. There's that dog-eat-dog world, really, like literally. We talk a lot about love, but we usually mean it's a feeling, and I'm talking about actions here, not the warm fuzzies you get about like something. Because we'll talk about I love chocolate, or I love that outfit, or I love the Cubs, or what, you know, whatever it is. Like you know, those are the warm fuzzy feelings. But I'm talking about how you actually act and behave. And sometimes when we do that, when we love somebody, you know, we're afraid to love people because if I do this one step. Like, now I'm going to get pulled into doing this and then this. And, you know, and pretty soon you're, like, so deep into it that you're like, how did I get this far in and how can I extract myself? My friend Kim is a pastor, and she tells the story of meeting Eric Mulanda at Africa University. Many of you will recognize Eric there in the middle. He's the pastor at Mount Hope United Methodist Church down the street. Kim met Eric first when she was studying over in Africa, and Eric was the president of the student body council, and Kim had this sense that God was calling her to help Eric come here to the United States. But what she realized was that that was going to be a long-haul commitment. If you're going to help somebody move to the U.S., and that's not like just giving somebody, you know, panhandler on the street a couple bucks and then driving on your way. This is like a you're in kind of commitment. But God called her to that, and so she did it. And after a long process, Eric eventually moved here to the United States. And if you know anything about Mount Hope United Methodist, you know that one of the distinctive things about their ministry, and it's I don't know many churches in Lansing or really any others that are reaching out to the immigrant and refugee population like Mount Hope is. And it's because of Eric. Eric is African, and he speaks five languages. And so he's pulling them in because he's connected with them. They see that that church has hired somebody that looks and speaks like them. And so they're coming and worshiping with them. Now, what's especially interesting to me is this is a picture of Kim holding her granddaughter. I'm not sure if it's her son or daughter, but it's son and daughter and daughter-in-law or whatever, you know, on the left side. But Eric has become such good friends with their family that when her kids had a baby, they wanted Eric to be the one to baptize her. And so there's Kim hanging out while Eric is doing the baptism. I've been on the receiving end of someone who has loved with abandon here recently. Many of you, if you've been around here, you know Bill Chu. Bill is on our teaching team. He does the campus ministry over at MSU. This is a very clean-faced Bill. Right now he's got like all this facial hair, this big like Fu Manchu thing going on. And there's my glasses, by the way. If you see those glasses, bring them to me, please, okay? Oh, I do have the same shirt on too, don't I? That's kind of awkward. That is weird. Note to self. Check my fashion in my slides before I pick what to wear on Sunday morning. A year or two ago, I was celebrating my anniversary with Sarah, and I asked Bill, would you do a renewal of vows for us? And could we come out to Williamston where he lives? And you got any suggested places where I could surprise Sarah with that? So he said, I know the perfect place. It's this bridge over the river. And so I got Sarah down to the bridge. And then there was Bill in his, like, pastor's garb with his, he's serenading us with a guitar. And now whenever we're out, Sarah's like, is Bill Chu going to be around the corner there? But a couple weeks ago, I had a really difficult situation where my stepmom was going to ask the court for permanent guardianship of my dad. And he wasn't very happy about that. It's never fun when you have to go to court as a family. And I started thinking about, you know, I don't want to drive down to Indianapolis by myself. That's a 4-hour drive. I don't want to stay in my parents' home by myself overnight. I don't want to go to the court by myself. I don't want to drive home the 4 hours after whatever happens in the court. I don't want to be by myself. And I thought about, who could I ask? Who would be willing to give up 2 days of their life to hang out with me in this sort of family trial? No pun intended. And one of the people that was at the top of the list was Bill. I said, Bill, would you do this? And he said, almost without hesitating, he said, yeah, I'll do it. I don't know what he had to clear off his schedule to love me with abandon for those 2 days. I'm sure he didn't just have two full like days that didn't have anything on his calendar. But it made all the difference. It made all the difference. Somebody in your life needs 2 days of your life, needs your calendar cleared. Who can you love with abandon this week? Who can you love with abandon? So a next step, do something risky for love this week. I'm not talking about romantic love. I'm not going to say, like, don't go to somebody and say, God told me I was going to marry you, because they'll say, well, God hasn't told me yet, okay? I'm not talking about romantic love. I'm talking about, like, the way that you love the people around you. Do something risky for love this week. So let's remember where we've been. Warm up with words, give gifts, love with abandon. God, you call us to get out of our comfort zone and to get on the edges of that into the wildness and weirdness of being in new situations and meeting new people. And sometimes, God, we'd rather stay in the middle where we're in control. Help us to have some fun this week, God, by following you. With our words, with our gifts, and with our actions. In the name of Jesus, in the power of the Spirit, and all who agreed said, Amen. Amen.